Yes, massive greetings. This is yours, Freddie McGregor. We are in town. Myself, Coco T, Steve Fierce, Barrington Levy. And you don't know, Saturday is a big one over at Brixton O2 Academy. We all die, so make sure you're dead. All fathers, come represent. This is yours, Freddie McGregor, and you're tuning in to Daddy Fridge and Mr. T.
Right now, you're in tune to Daddy Fridge and Mr. T on lightningradio.co.uk, and today we have a reggae legend with us who was born in Clarendon, Jamaica on the 27th of June in 1956. It's none other than the one and only Mr. Big Ship himself, Freddie McGregor. Welcome back to the UK.
Blessed, Daddy Fridge and the crew.
Ahead of the big Uprising Festival this Saturday at the Brixton O2 Academy. Freddie, I need to start off by asking you where your music career started from. Because I know in 1963, at the age of 7, you joined Ernest Wilson and Peter Austin to form the Clarendons.
Yeah, well, actually, Clarendon was formed before I joined up with them.
See.
But all of them come from the same local community, so everybody basically linked with us Clarendonians. And that's where the name come from, really, you know.
See.
Us being from Clarendon.
You went on to record for Studio One. Now tell us, what was it like for yourself at such a tender age?
It was like a dream.
Yeah,
because at a tender age, if you end up at Cox's Studio One, it's like Michael Jackson being at Motown.
Yeah, man.
And then, because then you're there around all of the great artists and musicians. I mean, it's like going to university and wake up for your first class in the morning and you see all them professors and the great people and who you admire around you. Really wasn't different.
Alright, now I want to go to the late 1970s and the early 1980s. You worked with producer Niney, the Observer.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what was it like working with him? What works did you do?
It was fun. It was my first production outside of Studio One. Niney was the first producer I worked with, other than Mr. Dad at Studio One. And
yeah.
That was from 1963 to 1979. So, all of my other years were spent at Studio One.
Yeah.
79, me and Niney hooked up. And we made the album Mr. McGregor,
yeah,
which Count Shelley released, and that really gave me great props in England. And as a matter of fact, that was the album that really brought me to England for the first time. And Niney as a producer, excellent. And I wish people would recognize the excellence of Niney the Observer, because things and times have changed so much that in today's world, this generation don't really get a chance to understand people like Niney the Observer, Bonnie Lee, and producers from that era. the great catalog of work that them have and the great works that they contribute to producing, you know, because that became a great part of our music culture. But 9 years, I love 9 years. I would have 9 years at least number two on my list as producer.
Yeah,
full of vibes, set the rhythm, and then we can't forget the amount of hit songs when 9 years produced with Dennis Brown. So 9 years a real true champion.
Yeah, man. The year of 1975, this mm-hmm. was the year that you converted to be an arrestor.
Yeah, that was the year when me start realize what really happened around me, you know? The consciousness kind of awake, man.
Because I saw, and a lot of people saw, it had a big impact on the way that your music changed.
It really did change. And you could have checked it too, because that change catch me reading the Bible a lot.
Same.
And the inspiration basically was drawn from that. And as you hear it in other songs, I'm like, you say.
All right, let's move on to the song Push Comes to Shove. Now, tell the listeners, who did you work with on the song Push Comes to Shove?
Push Comes to Shove was released in 1986.
See.
Between 1983 and 86, I was signed to Ras Records in the US.
Okay.
And we had our first album was called Come On Over. With a song named Shirley Come On Over, among a bunch of other hardcore stuff. Then the second album came out, it's called Across the Border. Those projects saw me doing production, because I got the opportunity to do the production during that era. So at that time, we had Studio One Band,
which
was one of the most solid band ever to come out of Jamaica during those eras, you know. And we toured for many, many years, and our goal was to move the music on to another level. So if you notice, those particular albums, we were always trying to push the envelope. I try to create things that can create some kind of magic in some way. So we make songs like All in the Same Boat, The Push Come to Shove. I mean, among many other songs that became popular during that era. But that was how I got a chance to start exhibit my own production skills and working with Cleveland Brown, the drummer of Studio One Band at the time, who later became Steely and Cleavey, and all those great musicians. We were poised, Dalton Brownie, we were poised to do great things. So 1986 was an excellent year for me personally.
Okay, Freddie, we're here and the phone lines inside the studio are blowing up like crazy. Please,
as always,
I need you.
You don't
want to blow up, you know. You see, I need you to give us a couple of lines out of Push Comes to Shove.
Push Comes to Shove, yeah, I guess it's a standard everybody somewhere. I'm a longing to see you. I want to know how you've been doing over in London. You know, because when I write some tunes, I really write them based on the place where I think them going to be most effective. Like you come London and you do a concert and you see all the people them really groove. You go to a Shubin. Them time we had Shubin more than just party vibe. And you see all the people them react. So in creating the rhythm, I say, yeah, maybe if my bounce the beat that way, I can see England and dance to it. That kind of way. Because it's all inspiration and imagination and you have to think about it, you know. And it really did work. As I remember during those years in England, those were like some really high points of my career personally. It was after that I became signed to Polydor actually.
Saying you're in tune to lightningradio.co.uk and we're talking to Freddie McGregor, head of the Big Uprising Festival taking place this Saturday at the Brixton O2 Academy. Let's play Push Comes to Shove.
Roll it.
Doing right now, cause when
push comes to shove, nobody
Yes, massive greetings. This is yours, Freddie McGregor. We are in town. Myself, Coco T, Steve Fierce, Barrington, Levy. And you don't know, Saturday is a big one over at Brixton Auto Academy. We all die, so make sure you're dead. All fathers, come represent.
All right. The year of 1989 saw the big record label, yes, Big Ship, come alive. Apart from being the most successful label in Japan right now, tell us a bit more about the label, how it come about. Why did you decide to do your own label?
Because after signing to Polydor in 1987, and we had Just Don't Want to Be Lonely, which became a national top 10 hit, and right after Just Don't Want to Be Lonely, we had That Girl, Groovy Situation, and So I'll Wait for You, and things started to happen with Polydor, which was a dream for me, because my dream was always working towards getting a major deal. So over the years, having a 12-piece band, which is Studio One band, with no real company support, you know, there was a vision beyond that. You know, I wanted to make sure the music was intact, because that is what was going to guarantee me a place in the industry. And it really did work out. But after my years at Polydor, when Just Don't Want to Be Lonely became a top 10 song, and we followed up with That Girl, Groovy Situation, after a while, Polydor started to have problems with Our Price Records. When the song charted, Our Price couldn't supply the record enough. And so there was a problem. At that point, my management was Big Life Management here in the UK. And Big Life used to manage Lisa Stanfield, Cold Cut, George Michael, etc., etc. So they wanted to move us on to Arista Records. And Jazz Summers and the attorneys spoke to me about it. And, you know, I thought about it. And, you know, I said to myself, well, Jazz, what me really, really want to do is start my own label. I'm going to say, bloody hell, that's going to be a lot of work, mate, and all of that. And I say, yeah, you know, I recognize that, but where do I start and when do I start? Because you have to start somewhere.
Yeah.
As Polydor started one day, well, I want to start one day too.
Oh.
And I started my own label. I knew it was going to be a struggle, because it would have been easier to just sign to Arista and continue the program, which Lisa Stanfield and the rest of the people had moved on to.
Yeah.
But, you know, I wanted to start my label, and I did, took a chance. Released some songs with Tiger, Papa San, Stitchy, a number of different artists during the time, trying to build a vibe and build a label. And it worked, you know. Then I embarked on a series called the Jamaican Classics, because at the time the music started to get a little topsy-turvy, and we weren't sure of direction and all of that, you know, because Bob Marley wasn't around anymore. So there was this competition in terms of everybody wanted to be the head of the music now, and everybody forging ahead. So when things like that happen, you could easily lose a good song or a great album. So I opted to record a series called Jamaican Classics.
Okay, because you're a man that come from the ska days.
Oh, yes.
When the music then changed over the years.
To rock steady, to reggae, to dancehall, to...
What was the changes like for you? Because obviously you had to change with the time.
Well, yeah. I mean, when dancehall became potent, as a matter of fact, during the era of Big Ship, there are two things that contributed to Big Ship's success, apart from the song being a great song. England went to war with Falklands.
Yeah.
I remember that very clearly. So every day on the news, it was about war, firing back and forth, ships going down. So I guess the song started to take up momentum as a good song. And with all of that happening, it just catapulted. Then every cruise liner now realized that there was this song, Big Ship Sailing on the Ocean. So whenever there was a party cruise, Big Ship would be the theme song. See. And when the ship moving out of port, Big Ship would play, and when it get back into port, it would be Big Ship, just the same. So the song just eventually blew up, you know. And that really set the trend. And even my brethren them start calling me Big Ship. So I'm like, yeah, maybe it's not a bad idea, you know. Maybe should I just call my label Big Ship too.
Yeah, man.
So I just name a label Big Ship, then went on to name my recording studio Big Ship. And everything just kind of fall under Big Ship. Because like I tell you from earlier, my dream is for Big Ship to become like a Polydor.
Yeah.
And you have to start. So today in 2010, we see Big Ship still sailing. And sailing even greater too, because we have younger captains in Steve Mancino. So,
yeah, man. For real, make it sail. Okay, let's talk about the album. Not just any album. I want to talk about the 2003 Grammy-nominated reggae album, entitled "Anything for You," with tracks on like "Uncle Sam," "If You Want Me," "Gate Pass to My Heart," I'll Do Anything, and many more. How did the album come about?
That was a vibe. At the time, the whole Grammy thing became exciting, you know. Every artist wanted to forge them way through for get a Grammy nomination. I just wanted to make a great album, and if that album could get a nomination, then so be it. And the album came out, and people have the album as a solid album. And what I did was try to work with different producers at that time. So if you notice, Willie Lindo had a track on that album.
Yeah.
Stingray had tracks on the album. And we kind of try and spread it out so we could capture a wider international vibe. And rather than just me producing all the tracks. And so said, so done. The album got a Grammy nomination. And everyone thought that album would win the Grammy. But I got nipped by a madman named Lee Scratch Perry. And although it was a little disappointment, it was still fun. Because, you know, when I went to the Grammy Awards in New York, Madison, the first thing the chairman came out and said, him greet everyone, and him said, well, this evening is a wonderful evening. Because all those who are nominated, you are actually winners. Because to be nominated is a winning move. And if you don't win tonight, and you are still a winner. So I was born a winner, became a real solid.
Yeah,
and so that was really nice of me. And Scratch won, and a little disappointed, but we had to big it up, CMA, because Reggae and one of us won, and yeah, somebody man. Had to win. And I respect Scratch, though. I know Scratch from as a little baby boy at Studio One.
Same.
So that was that. And then we moved on from there, and everything just keep running, rolling, going on. You know, we be managing things to the point where we are today. And still looking forward to that album that will eventually win the Grammy too.
Boy, hit a big toot there. All right, Freddie, I gotta say enough respect to yourself, because you're an artist that gives back to the community. You donate to charities throughout the world, and you manage your own US and England-based children's organization, Big Ship Foundation, and the Freddie McGregor Children's Fund, both of which provide services and funding to schools. Tell us a bit more about the Big Ship Foundation.
Big Ship Foundation is a US registered company, an organization set up primarily to try and assist with schools in Jamaica. Because I love work with youth, children, youth is my thing. That you can break the youth from early and get them to understand and grow up and become successful people. As opposed to trying to get some big man to understand what is happening today. So my thing is with the youths, and with Hales Hillassie High School, I've taken on that school, and we've tried on many occasions to raise funding for that school, which we have been successful, not to the point where we really want to, but we've done what we can and still continue to do so. In England, my Freddie McGregor's Children's Fund was set up in Birmingham.
Okay.
And that came as a result of our popularity in 1986-87. We performed at a place called The Hummingbird in Birmingham, which was a senior venue in Birmingham for all reggae activities. And I remember we were on tour and we sold out Hummingbird one entire weekend. And there was the last show we did on the night, the bullring couldn't hold people. So more people were outside with tickets than could actually get in. And so on a Wednesday, which was our day off, we had to go back and do a show for the people there. And it was packed again, and at that point, you know, I thought to myself, well, boy, if people really love me so much, I wonder what I could do for give back to the people. And the only thing I could think of on stage, because it really all happened on stage that night.
Yeah.
Then I just came back after an encore came back out, and me, I said, well, you know, we talk to the audience, because my people. And me, I said, well, I really want something for Birmingham, you know, and what I can do for Birmingham. And the crowd, everybody, I shout different things. And me, I said, you know what I'm going to do? Let's start a children's fund tonight for the city of Birmingham.
Yeah.
And I'm going to donate now the first £500 to that fund. And that's what I did, and the crowd went wild, and everybody thought that was like the greatest concept by an artist.
Yeah,
so some business people within the community really took it on seriously. And a lady, her name is Miss Selma. She agreed to be the point person for the foundation. And until today, Miss Selma is still active, doing work for the foundation. And we're able to donate stuff to children in Gambia and other places, which is really important for me personally. And when I went to Gambia, I saw the effect myself. There's a village in Gambia called Perrine, which that village, them call it Freddie McGregor's village. Because when we went to Gambia, I had no idea my songs were so popular in Africa. Amazed me, blew me away completely and entirely. And so I'm like, yeah, this is really a good thing, and this is something that we all should continue, not just myself. Sure. But there is a time when we need to give back in whatever way we can, because hear this, there are certain things that is given to us, and His Majesty is a person who reiterate them things there regularly. He said, too much is given, much is required.
Yes.
So if we understand that, we should understand that we have to give back. And you know, the king say we should also see that the hungry be fed, the sick nourished, age protected, and the infants cared for. Those are important things for us. Mm-hmm. And him also say, we the fortunate few must always remember the unfortunate many. So it is set up that few of us was going to be fortunate, and a lot of people are going to be unfortunate. But if God bless us to be fortunate, we shouldn't forget the unfortunate ones. So that is the basis under which me try set up my things them and try help.
Yeah, man. Well, I have to move on to when you and John Holt come to UK. It's been more than once, but not many people have the chance to perform with the Philharmonic Orchestra.
Yeah, and that wasn't just the Philharmonic. It's called the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra.
Yeah, man.
And that made the distinction. Royal. Well, I can tell you about that night at Hammersmith. It is the greatest concert I've ever done in this country, and probably period. Because I always tell people during my interviews, England is a place I love the most. No disrespect to the other territories. Yeah. But the reason for that is, you know, you perform in Japan and some place and people go crazy, literally crazy, because Japan is a huge marketplace for me personally. The US and other territories too, but there's something about England and my music now. I always say the British people not only love our music, but understand it to a T. Mm. And that makes a difference. True. Hence the reason when I do certain shows in England, I can go way back inside of my catalogue and draw for some tune. We're going to definitely mash up the place. Mm. And it's not just some regular popular song.
True.
That is how deep the English audience go back where the music is concerned. So that is my reason for loving England more than the other territories. Because these people go extremely deep when it comes to our music and culture. So England is truly my place. But that concert, that night after my performance, I went out front to watch John Holt, because no way I was going to watch it from backstage. So I went straight out front to the mixing board. And that night, I was totally, totally blown away. And for me personally, I personally give John Holt, Sir John Holt, after that concert that night.
Mm-hmm.
Guys, sometimes some of us too proud to recognize the greatness of our peers, and for really tell them, say them great, you know.
Sure.
And there should be no holding back where that is concerned, because these are the people who blaze the trail and set the foundation for we. So you can't afraid for tell them, say, yo, you're absolutely the best thing. And the night, I'm going to tell John, say, boy, John has off tonight, a Sir John Holt union for me, you know. Sure. I must say, don't say that. I'm going to show Bridget. I'm going to show mad like this. And until today, you know, I mean, that DVD stands out as one of the finest reggae DVD of all time.
Yeah,
and I think it will continue.
Definitely.
To remain that way. Mm. Excellent concert, and in my resume, that have to be like on the top of it. That was a great one for
me.
The second greatest thing to happen in England also, right here in Brixton too. That was the visit of Mr. Nelson Mandela, because I actually performed for Nelson Mandela and Prince Charles right here in Brixton.
Wow.
Over at the Brixton Center.
Yes, the Recreation Center.
Yes, when Mr. Mandela came here to England. So those are two things that stand out for me in my head.
You're in tune to lightningradio.co.uk, and we're talking to Freddie McGregor, head of the Big Uprising Festival, taking place this Saturday at the Brixton O2 Academy. All right, Freddie, please, let us know. What are you up to at the moment? Do you have any projects coming up?
I always do. For a couple of years now, I really take a break still. I must admit that. And the break really was as a result of the arrival of Stephen, followed by Chino. Big Ship really started to take on young artists. My responsibility kind of became taking care of the business side of it. Then Stephen became signed to EMI at the age of 17. And Stephen was young, so he can't sign a contract. So I had to play that role. And so we were able to put that together, and it took a little time putting everything in place, getting him set. Then my next worry was Chino, because Chino took the music on, and I tell you this, music is no respecter of persons. there's no guarantee that you're going to be a success in music. Never, ever.
Mm.
So this is something you have to know from day one. And you have to try and build yourself, fight hard to stay with it until that success comes. And so your best is required as a result. Because if you want to be that successful, then you have to put your best in.
Sure.
And so by the time I look around, quite a few years have passed. And Steven started to get more involved in what he was doing. Then come Mavado, then come all the other artists that Steve worked with and break those artists. So it took some time. And I had to take that time off to pay attention to that. Now that is all set and is running, I am back to my thing now. So if you notice, a lot of people been waiting for Steven to produce his father. And people are still looking out for that.
Yeah,
so,
well.
Recently Steven dropped a rhythm call. What is the rhythm name now? Catalog
rhythm.
And so Elephant and Mavada and all of them who basically that big ship every day started say, Steven, we need a vocal tune for that rhythm, man. A vocal tune can send the rhythm, man. You know, like your father the man for that rhythm, man, you know.
Yeah.
Your father the man for that rhythm, man, you know. Cause your father, remember your father have the punani tune when that tune come out and the bad dancer tune mash up the place and rare.
Yeah,
so I say, yeah. All right, I'm back on it. And one evening we're out front, I play with Domino as usual, and Elephant upon the gazebo, I play the rhythm, and I do him here, and we walk over them. I say, Ellie, the rhythm that, don't tell him. I say, yeah. And so, man, I know, I'm just hear the rhythm I play, I'm just say, they don't know what we know, they can do what we do. Ellie, I say, yes, see the song that we may talk about, and the song, Steven, come Steven, we'll find the song, and the whole excitement, and the rare, and so, studio, and the next thing is the baddest dancehall tune. So, you know, a lot of people are surprised that I really come that kind of way they know. But it's not new. Because my original dancehall artist from day one.
Really?
It's just that it come in at a time when the little youth them never expected that. But it works, and the song is becoming one of the most popular dancehall songs and the most popular song on the rhythm right now as we speak. So, we're just blazing the trail. Not that I am become that dancehall artist. Still Freddie McGregor, do what I do, but we're versatile and we're flexible and we can take on just about anything for the music. So that is just one single. We're coming up with a number of other singles. Joe Fraser have another single out with me as well. Like Campbell and I, we do a lot of work together, and that's a badass tune, and that's getting a lot of love right now too. And so just putting together an album, which will come later on, before the end of the year, for next year's release. Chino's new album comes out in Japan now on July 25th. And we're heading out to Japan to promote that album later on in the year. And we're just working and building the vibe as we go on right now. Steve was taking on the vocal thing too, because Steve was a little shy kid basically and don't love the camera and the upfront thing. But he started singing because he can do it. And so I think he started to get more comfortable doing it, and it really worked for him. Friend Again is one of the biggest songs as we speak today. So, you know, we're just getting ready for a video now for the catalog with him. Medley video, and we'll just take it from there.
I'm telling you, Steven, the genius, the man that come out of it and is producing the biggest dancehall rhythms for Jamaica right now.
Yep.
Now, what is your views on dancehall music? Because like you tell us, you were on dancehall rhythms back in the day, so it's not new to you.
No, that is what surprised everybody now. Because I wonder, oh, Steven father sit down on a rhythm or something. Like, he might do it long time, but that is just the youth that we don't know.
For real.
But we who know, we know. So, it's not new, like you say. It's just fun. It's fun for me personally. It's fun that I'm able to do that. And that's Steven Rhythm, actually. And really strength and support what I'm doing. Because dance are getting a real bad rap these days.
Yeah,
as a result of the lyrical contents, the behavioral pattern and everything. So from time to time when that happens, you need a song or an artist who can come in at the mix and kind of bring back some respectability to the genre. So I kind of just consider my song and that rhythm as one of those that will bring back some respectability, and people can realize that dancehall is not just all what we think it is. Dancehall can be nice. It's nice if Barry Saman try one of them tune too.
for real. Yeah, well, we're going to link up Barry's, not worry about that. Trust me. Freddie, where can the listeners find out where you're touring, what you're getting up to? You have a website?
FreddieMcGregor.com.
Okay.
And of course, everything we do is linked through Steven, and you know, the youth, them have for them thing. Them go Twitter, them go Facebook, them go everything where exists on the internet. So yeah, we have our network really spread out, and tour dates and everything will be listed, of course.
Well, I tell you, it's a good thing that you talk about Twitter, because before we linked up, I put it on Twitter, Daddy Fridge interviewing Freddie McGregor, and the genius linked me straight away and said, hail up.
All right, because it's a Twitter kid,
It's been a great pleasure and honor to be able to interview you today, Freddie, but you know what, we can't just let you go like that. You know, the listeners, the UK listeners, they're hard. They wouldn't be happy with that. Please, give us a little medley.
A medley. So what? They don't know what we know. They can do what we do. What am I gonna do for stop our flow? See that now lightning is on the go. To the Father, fridge him pray for guide and protection every day. No matter what them do or say. Damage. Why them a take up something where them can't manage? Big ship a sailor with the average. No say we full up of knowledge. Now roll with no loose baggage till Saturday.
My gosh, Freddie, blessed love, give thanks every time.
Yeah, man, enough love, enough respect.
We just spoke to Freddie McGregor ahead of the big Uprising Festival this Saturday at the Brixton O2 Academy. Live on stage for the first time together in London will be Freddie McGregor alongside Coco T, alongside Barrington Levy.
Clarendon people don't miss it, and I hear my Twitter and everything else. Clarendon, you come from. Make sure you come. Sell off.
And the singing sensation, Stevie Face. Tickets are on sale now, and you can get yours from www.ticketweb.co.uk or 08444771000. Make sure you get yours. Let's play Big Ship, Freddie McGregor, right here, lightningradio.co.uk.
Must hold on steady, we're moving off at lightning speed, yeah. Take a seat and wait till I'm ready, I'm coming, so hold on steady, yeah.
Big ship sailing on the ocean,
we don't need no commotion.
Big ship sailing on the ocean,
oh, oh, oh yeah.
Say big ship sailing on the ocean. Big ship sailing on the ocean.
Whoa, 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 yeah. There's a time when the sea gets rough, the wind is blowing and the fishes keep moving. What are you doing, Mr. Man? Sit down, hold on tight, get ready, cause we're sailing.
Big ship sailing on the ocean.
We don't need no commotion.
Big ship sailing on the ocean.
Get ready cause we're moving.
Big ship sailing on the ocean.
Whoa, 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 yeah.
Big ship sailing on the ocean.
Whoa, yeah. Say when I'm ready, you must hold on steady. We're moving off at lightning speed, yeah. Take a seat and just wait till I'm ready. I'm coming, hold on steady, cause
big ship sailing on the ocean.
We don't need no commotion.
Big ship sailing on the ocean.
We got to come over.
Big ship sailing on the ocean. We're sailing on the ocean.
Yeah. Say there's a time when the sea gets rough, the wind is blowing and the fishes keep moving. What are you doing, Mr. Man? Sit down, hold on tight, get ready, cause we are sailing.
Big ship sailing on the ocean.
We don't need no commotion.
Big ship sailing on the ocean.
We got to come over.
Big ship sailing on the ocean.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Big ship sailing on the ocean.
Yeah. Yes, massive greetings. This is yours, Freddie McGregor. We are in town. Myself, Coco T, Steve Fierce, Barrington Levy. And you don't know, Saturday is a big one over at Brixton O2 Academy. We all die, so make sure you're dead. All fathers, come represent.